rigor mortis died, if that's a thing.
I'm rattled. You reenacted one of the scenes in your driveway. It is dark outside. There's only headlights on you. You don't know how scary you just looked.
Emphasis on headlights? All right. We're doing a preview review type thing for the movie Hereditary.
Now, non-spoilers, illusions only.
Yeah, we're just going to basically tell you whether or not this movie is worth your time and worth your while getting your butt into theaters to see. We're not going to go deep into this. It's not going to be a spoiler-filled review like also Mike just said. It's going to be non-spoiler. We're going to just basically tell you some of the ins and outs of the movie, a lot of the prep work we do. We're going to hold off giving you the twists and turns and the full deep dive that we do when it comes time for the Oscar Sprint profile of the movie, most likely later on in the year, because we both think this is going to have legs for something to do with the Oscars.
We've judged a lot of Oscar movies.
Yeah.
Stack them next to each other. And this kind of feels like that level of quality. Certainly that level of acting. I think the production values are there too.
We totally agree. Yeah. We totally agree. So we both think this is something that we hope anyway it's going to be talked about again as we get towards those 2019 Academy Awards.
It quacks like a duck.
Yeah.
A scary,
that's a terrifying duck.
Duck.
A malevolent duck.
The ducks are Oscars. Oh, I didn't write a lot for this episode. We kind of called it audible today.
We ran home from the theater. We're recording this on June 7th. We saw the first showing of Hereditary at one of our local theaters. Ran home, hit the record button. So we're just kind of doing this from the hip.
Off the cuff, man.
And because of that, we also don't want to give you misinformation about our interpretations of the finale of this movie. So that's another reason we're kind of holding off. But again, we're going to give you everything that we can up into the big spoilers of the movie. Not going to touch on those. But we kind of want to paint a picture for you as to whether or not you should see this movie for yourself. I, of course, am your co-host, Mike One. This is my co-host, also Mike.
Yes, I'm also Mike, and perhaps we should promise, but I don't even want to promise, especially how rattled I am down to my soul, down to my core. But I think we'll get a spoiler-filled review, a deep dive to you at some point.
Yes, that is the hope and the dream and the prayer. I don't like promising things anymore. I'm a bad person. Anyway, what do we want to lead off here with, Mike? We have, of course, the movie Hereditary. Welcome to Mike and Oscars, a weird pseudo-profile preview review type thing for the movie Hereditary. You've seen Variety, you've seen the Daily Mail, you've seen it all over social media, people calling this the scariest movie of all time, because that's what we have to do anytime there's a decent horror movie out anymore.
Yes.
Everyone has to overreact and give it all these accolades that it may or may not deserve.
Which sucks, because it just gives you that Radio Raheem like reaction. You either love it, and if you don't love it, you have to hate it. Come on.
Yeah, in the past couple years alone, the greatest horror movie of all time has gone from The Cabin in the Woods to It Follows to the remake of It to, of course, Get Out last year, which we gushed over and over ad nauseum, and now it's Hereditary.
Yeah, I mean, they're all their own unique blend. Yes. They're like IPAs with different flavors.
Also, I drink water. No, you're right.
They're all a little bitter. They're all a little scary. You know, some are flavored with bark. Some are flavored with root beer. I don't know. Others
have clever names. Yeah. It's not fair to group these all together. You're totally right. And have them under the umbrella of horror, where you think of, you know, the Michael Myers of the world. Oh, my God, the Halloween trailer's coming out on Friday.
Yeah, you're hyped.
Oh, my God. We're seeing that movie. But yes. It's not fair to do that, and this, I don't think, would be a traditional horror movie. I guess let's start on what you were expecting out of this movie.
So here's the thing. Like, we're not going to give away, like, what subgenre of horror movie this is or any kind.
Aliens!
No. No. Because, exactly, like you said, Aliens gives you a much different feel than Get Out.
Right.
Okay, so the whole hiding the ball trick of the marketing, they want to give you clues to what kind of horror movie it is, but they don't flat out tell you. And illusions, again, not illusions, if not illusions, but illusions with the A. You like when I spell for you folks here on the pod?
That's two L's, a U.
Illusions to what kind of horror movie?
How did the marketing hit you? What kind of movie were you expecting going into the theater tonight?
The marketing freaked me out. The marketing was jagged. It reminded me of Get Out, but a little less so. I was intrigued by the visuals of the dollhouse. I was intrigued by Toni Collette. She was giving like a weird performance for a horror movie, like going for it in dramatic scenes, and we'll get to her, and then like giving you that, it's just a little off. you know?
Yeah, off seems to be the word I would describe it to. Toni Collette had some interesting visuals in the trailer, I would say. Millie Shapiro, who plays the young girl Charlie, also had some interesting shadings and looks in the trailers. It was a little off-putting. You're totally right. You definitely got a creepy vibe.
The kid is
else.
Scary, yes. Yeah, the kid is scary.
Never having kids, I'm not doing it.
The older boy is always scared. Which yeah. is like, and I guess he becomes a bit of a surrogate. And, you know, that's no surprise because we're watching him watch himself in mirrors and then reflective surfaces in the trailers. So
did the expectations, did the hype that this movie received, especially today since it just came out from all these major publications, did it do too much? Did it ruin anything for you?
Not quite. I can't put my finger on it right now. I think this movie delivered a lot of goods, to give you a teaser into my review, and I was fairly well engaged throughout this film. How about you, Mike?
Engaging is the $10 word of the day, because this, and I said this to you a couple times throughout, I was expecting a relatively normal horror movie with a good screenplay.
This is anything
the goods.
But, right?
The pacing of this is unlike any horror movie I've ever seen. I've seen a lot of them, but I've never seen a movie that's paced like this where you don't really even, at least for me, you don't get a jump scare until over an hour into the movie.
Right.
And when you think, you know, that the horror movie, the classic setup is 10-minute intro, 10-minute day of the life, and then things go dark and you get your first jump scare. And I was waiting for that, and it just never came.
It's not a traditional cookie cutter, conventional.
Certainly not.
In terms of box office type horror movie. It's the opposite in many ways of It.
Yeah, you know, no, it's very
like
fair.
It is that spectacular funhouse carnival ride, mm-hmm. and this is like an indie horror movie that plays up some big moments. And I called them. We kind of quibbled in the preamble today about what we called. It's not because it's not a jump scare. It's right. I called them a freak out. And you called it a creep
creepy.
Out or creepy.
Creepy. They're just creepy. Yeah, they make your skin crawl.
There are many creep moments in this movie, a whole lot. And to me, that's just not atmospheric. There's a lot of ways that they're getting you to freak out. Those goods were delivered, and I guess we'll tell you how in a few ways.
Yeah. Let's start with the actual theater-going experience. Once again, Mike and I saw this hand-in-hand next to each other in reclining theaters. We shared a popcorn bag. Yep. We both actually had our own individual pizzas.
Leather
from Pizza
seats.
Hut. It was disgusting. We're terrible people.
Which was good, though. It hit the spot.
Delicious.
We didn't eat. We were all pushing against it today. And we
just didn't even use our hands. Just shoved our faces.
Oh, my God. It was a great day.
Packed theater. I mean, it was a Thursday night. It was the first showing, a 7 p.m. showing on the East Coast here. Mm-hmm. Packed theater.
Mm-hmm. Loud theater. A lot of people yelling and talking at the screen.
Not just me.
But you most of all, let's be honest. You also have the most things to say. Like, everybody says, like, normal things. Like, oh, what the fuck? And you're just like... saying like in a reference to something weird.
Yeah, like, I get that a lot.
Beverly Hills Cop 3, man. What the Murphy? Did you just come up with these?
Yeah. Yeah, I do that.
These things.
I do. But yes, there was a loud theater, which is one of the things that stuck with me. There was a lot of people reacting in various ways to, again, things that I wouldn't consider jump scares, just weird and off-putting moments that kind of definitely fit with the theme of what this script was going for.
I am rattled, to say the least, coming out of this movie.
Your face just looked like Toni Collette in a couple
driving,
scenes.
Yeah, I mean, driving back to your house, my hands are shaking on the wheel a little bit. So that was something new. I don't know if I just had a Trump-sized Diet Coke, and I'm not a Trump-sized man, so I can't. I just caffeine this late at night, it doesn't work for me.
Right. I think the movie has something to do with that.
Listen, I had car trouble, and I thought my dog had cancer today.
Yes,
as
it was
well.
A bad day.
So
for
I had
you.
A really bad day. So this,
and
was,
you ended it on Hereditary,
and I ended it with one of the most batshit crazy horror movies in a while. So yes, this is my nerves are on edge, but I this is a movie that gets you there.
Oh
so
yeah,
I think. You know, to sum up kind of this preamble, I think as a teaser, this movie delivers a lot of horror movie goods. It's just, you got to be, you can't be fixated on getting the horror movie goods you want from something like It or something like even The Sixth Sense, which is very, hold on, wait a minute, boo.
Yeah, you know, to go back to expectations, if you buy the hype and are expecting like, oh my God, this is going to break all kinds of records for my mind and what a horror movie is, you're probably going to be disappointed.
Yeah, this is art house.
Exactly. Horror movie. Very low, I don't want to say production quality because it's not that, but it's not this grand budget type horror movie.
It's like The Witch, but not in the King's English times five on the freakouts, like I said. Because The Witch was the same way. There wasn't jump scares.
Yeah, just mood setting. It was creep out, yeah.
And atmospheric, and that was much more like Ingmar Bergman trying to write a horror movie, right. You know? So it's way on the indie end. This is that times, what did I say, five?
Yeah,
maybe
five.
Seven.
Yeah.
Maybe seven.
It was the producers of The Witch that produced this movie as well. And let's talk about the cast and crew that was in Hereditary. Five major performances throughout this movie. And it's a movie centered on five main characters. Obviously, Toni Collette is the one everyone's going to be talking about going into and out of this film. But
yes,
it was, to rattle off the names, Alex Wolff's Peter, Gabriel Byrne's Steve, Toni Collette's Annie, Millie Shapiro's Charlie, and because we can never get away from her, and she at some point is going to win every supporting role ever for everything she does, Ann Dowd playing Joan.
Ann Dowd from The Leftovers, from True Detective, a lot of things. HBO.
Anytime she shows up on screen, you know shit goes bad.
She's been doing the she's been doing that creepy thing, that bad Penny in every single movie of late, and it does freak you out. Now, Toni Collette, Sixth Sense, we've mentioned that a couple times. I've watched Muriel's Wedding for the first time this year. Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah.
She's been very good.
She's a talented actress. I didn't think she had this in her.
A bit underrated, right?
Oh my like God, those... now, seeing her full range of being able to pull off what she pulled off in terms of just relaying emotion and feeling, making you feel it was authentic, and my God, her face.
Matching her up with Gabriel Byrne. From Miller's Crossing, Man in the Iron Mask, Usual Suspects, End of Days, he was the devil. In Treatment, when he was the HBO therapist, this feels like the most, the closest comparison to his character in this movie. This husband is just like managing all the crazy in the family.
I felt so bad for him. I did feel so bad for him. And I'm sure it's a metaphor for something that I'm not supposed to feel bad for him, but it just taking on face value, it's you're right. It's the husband. And usually in horror movies, it's the possessed dad. It's the evil dad with evil intentions,
yes,
you know?
Right?
This was kind of
Amityville
a counter
horror
convention, right?
No, this is
the house is talking to the dad, right? And this was a kind of counter convention where, again, Toni Collette is the main character of this.
I like
that
a lot.
She's the one having to deal. I do too. I thought it was a really nice twist. And it's not often you get to feel empathy for the father figure in the family of a horror movie, and
very
this
true.
Kind of led you there.
Very true. The gender reversals and the tropes, a lot of tropes reversed with this movie, which I think after we kind of rewatch it a couple times, we're gonna try and point that out for you and enjoy. Let's see if it holds up. The son character, Alex Wolff, was in Jumanji, if you're looking for a recent star out of him. Red Oaks, he was a director in that show. I watch Red Oaks.
He was a director?
Thoroughbreds, uncredited. He was at one of the parties. It's nothing else really sticking out to me. I guess I noticed him from Jumanji then. Yeah, My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2. I guess he's been around for a little bit. The Sitter.
He played one of the Bombers in Patriots Day, Alex Wolff did. It's not one I've seen. Have you seen that?
Patriots Day. That's right. That's where he was in. The most conspicuous cop/spy Mark Wahlberg, and he was in another spy movie, like
who Wahlberg?
You gotta blend in. Yeah, it's just like he's a joke of himself that we saw in the trailers. Like you gotta blend in, and then he just looks around like 17 times with his freaking eyebrows on the top of his forehead. He's the most conspicuous. Everybody knows you're a spy, you meathead idiot. Sorry, I had rage for Mark Wahlberg.
That is not the first time you've lost your cool over Mark Wahlberg in this podcast.
All the money in the world. This is the dumbest scene in the movie. God damn it. Right. And it's a dumb scene in the trailer.
How do I get
before
you and his paths to cross in real life?
It's ridiculous. fucking Transformers. So we're moving on to specs, Mike?
Yeah, let's talk about some specs for this movie, Hereditary, and why it was such a big deal off the bat. Everybody saw this at Sundance and lost their fucking minds.
Yes.
This debuted January 21st at the Sundance Film Festival. It came out wide June 7th, technically, for the preview showings, which is the day when we're recording it. Hopefully you're listening to this June 8th, which is the official first day of its release. So therefore, we have no box office numbers for it because we just saw the first showings of it. We're way ahead of this game, which is not normal for Mike, and Oscar, but we're trying something new now. But it got a lot of word of mouth, and it got a lot of publications all up in a tizzy. And you heard a lot of this hyperbolic greatest horror movie, scariest movie of the year back in January.
Yes.
And it's kind of sustained that momentum up until this release date, which I thought is kind of cool and maybe a credit to the kind of legs that it does have going into awards season. It's a distributed picture by A24, which is one of the hottest distribution companies going right now. We talked about that all last year in our Oscar Sprint profiles. Produced by Palm Star Media, Finch Entertainment, and Windy Hill Pictures. A runtime of 127 minutes. It was made for a reported budget, according to Wikipedia, at least, of $10 million.
So it's going to make big money.
We're not breaking the bank there, and we're going to pull in a lot, you would think. 1,100 reviews already on IMDb, has a 7.9 out of 10. Talk about its Rotten Tomato scores. It is already certified fresh at 93%. The average score, nice. 8.6 out of 10 on 119 critic reviews. Eight of those being rotten. 111 positive reviews. 96%. There's no audience score since, again, it just came out, but 96% of users do want to see it. And let's talk about its Metascore. It, for a while, was the number one rated Metascore on Metacritic.
Yes.
They have it at an 87, and now sits at number 8, tied for number 7 with Sweet Country, 1 point below Black Panther, Zama, Paddington 2, and Death of Stalin, and 2 points below The Tale, 4 points below number 1 right now is The Rider, oddly enough.
I disagree with multiple things you just said.
I'm just here to report the facts, man.
The Tale, Paddington 2, give me a freaking break.
So, but the overall story of this, kind of the specs of this, is that this is beloved, highly rated, highly anticipated. Everybody wants to see it, and those that have seen it seem to be saying good and good and good things about it.
It's catnip to cinephiles and movie reviewers and critics. It feels like a movie where the film school guy is showing off a bit. And
yes.
I think there's a lot of questions that we still have, that we still ask ourselves, what does it all mean? Questions.
I hope there are answers. I hope there are answers that we
can
figure out.
But he's toying with you in many ways.
He is. I don't disagree with that. And he does try to give you at least some answers on its surface. You and I were discussing these before, that whether or not they have a deeper meaning or not. And we both kind of come to the conclusion that we hope they do and we think they do.
If they don't, then a movie like this can make us crazy.
Yeah.
Which might be the, like, The Ring videotape, its purpose. I don't know.
But are you trying to get, you've referenced that multiple times. Are you trying to get us killed? Is that what your end game here is?
If I diffuse it of its power,
Scientology. That's what it'll do.
By speaking it aloud. I don't know. But I definitely think this movie plays to critical personalities.
Well, it's very taste. I mean,
because it's art house, I guess.
It's art house. It's low budget. Horror is in vogue now, thanks again to Get Out. It's counter convention.
Yep.
And critics lap that stuff up, especially in this day and age.
While also delivering a lot of goods. And when I say delivering goods, I mean those freak out moments, like I said before.
Well, give me a taste of those. We'll go into production values. Let's start with the sight and what you saw on screen for this movie.
What I saw early on, we both kind of commiserated as we walked out. You have the dollhouse motif.
That's not
a spoiler.
It's in the trailer.
So it's amazing. The backdrop, the blocking, the stage product, the staging, the production design, all these backdrops, all these backgrounds are still like a dollhouse.
Yeah.
And most shots, and I think to reanalyze this, I wonder if it's so, most shots, it's just one person moving like you're playing with a dollhouse. Or like playing with action figures.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got two that are moving, and it's in many scenes, one character will move, stop, and like freeze. Something happens where the character freezes, and then the other character
can
move.
Are you coming to this epiphany right now as you're speaking? Because
Because
it's just like hitting me now.
I was freaking out watching that. I just kept noticing that. Because the Dollhouse, I'm thinking, I've seen a lot of David Lynch stuff, and I was just thinking...
There's definitely, and you mentioned it in the theater during the movie, there's Lynchian borrowing in this movie.
What does the Dollhouse motif mean? We're going to, I guess, figure it out for you later, but I was fascinated. But that was the biggest takeaway from my sight.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to hear you lay it all out there, because it's not something I picked up on until you mentioned it leaving the theater. But you're right. The whole time, you start with that image of the dollhouse. It's the camera pans in, and it does something with the dollhouse, and it's really cool. But that is always in the back of my head. Like the swing scene at the beginning of Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
And then what happens is we go into the pillow. That's always in the back of your head, and you're trying to link what's going on there. And maybe that is kind of a spoiler, or a pseudo spoiler, where, I mean, you're gonna have to see the movie, but
I don't know. But we don't know what it means either, so maybe not. But the thing is, like, when you looked at the dollhouse, I wasn't sure if that was a legitimate dollhouse or if it was the frame of a dollhouse with a green screen, and then them showing the actual video of a staged room.
That would be my guess, the latter, because if it's not, it is the greatest creation on the history in the history. And there are some miniature settings. The miniatures play a big role in this movie.
Yeah.
There are some miniatures that are in this movie that whoever did them is a genius. And they are unbelievable.
Of course, the actual furnishings of the house and of many of the sets look exactly like them.
Right, of course.
It's
yeah.
Total freak out.
It's unbelievable. It's really artistic in that way, too. Literally artistic.
The other thing I wanted to say was, in a lot of scenes, the tracking shots, they back out. Remember Steve Zissou's submarine, Life Aquatic, when you have multiple shots where you look at multiple rooms, like you're outside of the cross-section of the whole thing, like it's a diagram of the ship, of the sub.
Or like a dollhouse?
Like a dollhouse. Exactly like a dollhouse. I don't know why I went with the submarine.
Yeah, no, it was right there for you.
It was there. But the pans do like Wes Anderson did. That's why. Because the pans go many times through the frame of the actual ceiling or the whatever the beam is between. My dad's an engineer. The beam between the rooms that engineer set up. So that was, again, fascinating to me, like a dollhouse. I mean, I'm not going out on a limb here, but the visuals have that dollhouse motif.
Throughout. Very cinematic, too. There are a lot of shots where you're given that far away look. It's from a distance. It's from a down angle. It's perched on the ceiling. It's a swing shot going from the upside down, following a character down a hallway.
Yes, I felt like they got much more showy as the movie went along, which was cool.
Yeah,
which
that's
was
fair.
Cool to pull off.
Yeah,
because like you said, it's a slow burn.
Oh,
in terms of pacing, like you don't get that. You don't get a big scare for a while, and it's definitely something that builds, and it's almost like the filmmaker gets more and more confidence, and as this plot goes thoroughly spins out of control, now we get showy with our camera movement.
It's going to be really interesting, and this is, we talk all about our Infinity War prep about how there needs to be two separate cinematography categories. Well, it's interesting in still that there isn't, because you're going to have the Infinity Wars and the Black Panthers. I know you had some problem with the visuals, but just for argument's sake, you're going to have the big budget movies with their cinematography, and then there's this little $10 million movie that's pulling off some of the shots using nothing but practical effects, if you can even call them that. It's just set pieces and setting.
Just a very unique through line to the cinematography, like we've been
saying. It reminded me a lot of the Florida Project, too, in the way it was shot, as far as using what is around just a house, basically, to kind of be characters in a scene, aside from the only two people talking.
I think production design is going to happen. There's no question.
Yeah, you're probably right. That's probably a really good call.
Like, you see this, you see the just the detail, like you said, in the miniatures, and then likening that up to the actual props in the rooms of the set. That has to be nominated at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'd say Florida Project or something like It Follows, if you want to stay in the horror, on steroids. It Follows on steroids was a lot of
it. It Follows on steroids, but with, like, I don't know, an antiquing treatment, whatever you call that, because it's just very polished.
It is. It is. It's a sight to behold. It's not something you're used to seeing in horror movies, being so appreciative of the backgrounds and the set. Yeah,
right.
Totally off base.
Lush and dense.
I hesitate to go into the production value talking about sound because I don't know if you want to make the noise first or if you want me to make the noise
first. No, we shouldn't make it because okay. Let's just say, you remember that annoying kid in your first grade class? Well, you're going to be afraid of him in your nightmares for the
yeah.
next
he's coming back
10 weeks.
Yeah. Yes, there was an emphasis on sound or lack thereof in this movie. There's a lot of times that you're just listening to nothing, and then you get the one little sound that scares the shit out of you.
Oh, yeah. I haven't had sounds of such a low volume.
Yeah.
I know that they're enhanced.
Right.
But
I get what
they're
saying.
At
yeah.
a low volume. Just hit home. And,
mm-hmm.
and again, that freak out, I don't know. I'm trying to come up with a theme to this movie review, but
those
freaking
are,
me out.
Those are almost akin to some of the jump scary moments because they're not, you're not stark with a visual. You're not, a character doesn't turn around and there's another one right in their face. There's not a mirror thing like you see been done to death in so many horror movies.
Yes.
A lot of the jump scares are what I would consider to be jump scares in this movie are derived from the sound. And I don't know that I'm used to that. And the reason it's derived from the sound is because it's been so integrated into the script.
We would have expected A Quiet Place to have
yeah.
pulled off.
Yeah.
Because it was so, I guess,
quiet
sound.
Quiet is the word?
Focused. Yeah, yeah. Sound is a big part of it.
Right. No, it's a really good point. But this one, credit to Ari Aster in that making that, and you're wondering why he does it so early because that sound is repeated ad nauseum.
Sure.
So you know it's going to play some role.
And the thing is, like, anybody can startle you with a loud noise. And he does, he gets, like, that's a cheap sound effect.
Exactly.
In a way.
Exactly.
This is very specific
yes.
to the scene noises that he's given you once, and then when he gives you a second time as the payoff, you got goosebumps.
Yeah.
And you're freaking out.
Yeah. So, anything else on sound? I thought the score was perfect for a horror movie. Did you have issue with it?
I don't remember it.
It's not memorable. When horror movies, I always think of score as just mood setting. Does it do enough to keep you on edge?
I love the moods and the tones
yeah,
in this movie.
So that's what I was
maybe
going for.
It just worked for me in my head, and I have to go back and listen to it or think about it. So TBD, I'll give you in our spoiler review, I'll give you a score comment.
Fair enough. So let's get into the performances, the five main performances here.
Early David Lynch,
Toni Collette the Oscar now, or do we have to wait this out?
Again, we've analyzed a lot of these performances. We've stacked them up next to each other.
She is balls out in this movie.
But
oh
even
my
still, though,
God.
She's a little bit off. It reminds me of Laura Dern in Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart, right? It's just a little weird. It's before Ellen Burstyn goes completely batshit in Requiem for a Dream. It's just like that little, very unsettling, I guess is the word I'm looking
for. Well, it is unsettling, and it's unsettling. That also, I think, has to do with the script because mental abuse plays a large role in this script as well.
Yes.
And you are given this Toni Collette character who is forthright and saying, I mean, look, cards on the table. Can we talk about the mother's death? Just as a, that's where the movie starts.
Oh, the movie starts yeah. with Toni Collette's mother.
Right.
Dead.
So we're starting
it's in the
with,
trailers.
We're
yes.
starting with Toni Collette's mother being dead, and she gives the eulogy and explains her mother was played head games. She was a very private person, very
the
reserved.
The first
person.
Words of that eulogy or something like, I didn't write them down, but in my head, it was my mother was secretive. I was like, what the fuck?
She said, giving this eulogy literally feels like I'm betraying her trust.
Right.
So, and she
again,
goes on.
In the trail.
Yeah, she goes on to explain that her mother had an effect on her mental state of mind. And throughout this movie, you're given more and more pieces to the Toni Collette's character's mental state and that she's not all there. And there is some things that she's done to prove that she's not all there. Is she a dangerous character?
When you watch this, folks, look at her mouth. Like, study her mouth with the dialogue. It almost feels like that's
it's
a little off.
Off. I saw that, too, and I couldn't tell
our,
if it was...
Was that our clip?
I couldn't tell if it was fucking on purpose or not.
And then there's sometimes, again, it could be the editing, but it almost seems like on purpose they leave some stuff that should have been fixed by the script girl. That should have been fixed
that's
by the continuity
too, yeah.
person. And I kept seeing it. And David Lynch does it all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
On goddamn purpose.
Oh, without question.
And this felt like that.
Yeah. No, I totally give you 1,000% credit there. I didn't want to bring it up because I didn't know if it was just our video.
But... Well, I mean, look at it and tell us, folks.
But yeah, Toni Collette is the breadwinner of these five performances, I think, without question. And man, does she put on a clinic with her facials, with her eyes, with her screaming. My God, she looked like the devil in one scene.
Over the top is the wrong way to put it because there's real reaction to her co-stars in this movie. But she's just, it almost feels like she is just spending everything she's got. In every scene, she's spending a little extra, a little more than she knows she should, just to get this character across. And it feels like she's doing it on purpose. So it's obviously overdone. And maybe, like we said, talking about the ending, or we're going to allude to the ending. Maybe it's a little overdone. Maybe it isn't as smart as we think it might be. But right now, I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. That's a fair assessment. You talked about Gabriel Byrne being Steve, the reserved husband, father. They are a married couple. What did you think about their chemistry?
I was into it. It's very, you know, they're almost like polar opposites. And when they actually get a chance to bat back and forth with one another, and there's some scenes where you got two hands on two characters in the dollhouse, two dolls. It's very good. And he's doing the Leslie Manville thing, stoic, just with a twitch of the lip or a raise of the brow or just a turn of the head. He's giving away a lot. And I, again, it's a performance to study in further viewings. I'm into it, though. On first watch, I'm into it.
You were a fan of the Alex Wolff performance as well. I thought he did a good job. I wasn't blown away by him. I heard some people put him on the level of Toni Collette's, what I think is wrong.
What a weird character. I'm very...
Yeah.
That's the character I want to figure out more than anything. I want to figure that character out. I don't have a beat on who he is, what he represents, a million questions. I just know that kid staring with that dead-eyed look down, almost peeking through the tops of his eyes, kind of weird stare, stoner stare, freaks me the hell out.
I wonder how much it was... of the his creepiest scene was prosthetics and makeup, and how much was just him. That'd be interesting to know. I'm sure it'll be in probably the Blu-ray extras or something, but
they cast the right kid for that, I think. Yeah.
No, I agree. It was well done, played it off well. Just I want to put that out there. To me, Toni Collette was the star of this, but Alex Wolff more than held his own. And Millie Shapiro's Charlie. Good Lord, what a creepy kid.
Creepy kid. The haircut didn't match the face, I think, is the biggest thing I have to say. That Rachel from Friends haircut on that face doesn't make sense. That's all I'm saying.
A lot of things about this movie don't make sense yet.
It's very off. The Bill Belichick sweatshirt.
Yes. Yes.
Really weird. The fact that she's not wearing shoes, I don't know.
Going to a party and drawn. Yeah.
Yeah,
weird kid. Right. Don't have children. That's pretty much what we're here to tell you. So let's get into best scene, worst scene, and figure it out from there. Again, we're going to tiptoe around any kind of spoilers, but I think we have the same best scene.
We talked about it, the dinner table scene.
My Lord, Toni Collette.
Toni Collette, Gabriel Byrne, kids involved. Toni Collette goes off.
It's a power struggle, too, between who is going to land the last punch. Not only does Toni Collette give her side of the story, the child she's battling with gives their side of the story. The father tries to play peacekeeper, but you can tell he's sort of fed up with the whole idea of what they're arguing about and kind of doesn't want to hear it anymore.
I read it, and when I was taking it in, Toni Collette has to purge the feelings that she has. But at the same time, she mixes in, or she peppers in, little moments where she's still saying, "Oh, I love you, son. I'm trying to hold back. I know what she says is the worst thing ever a mother could say to anyone.
No, the worst thing she could say comes in a couple other scenes.
Right. But in many ways, she's kind of holding back.
Well, the counter argument that she has to deal with, too, is cut and nibbed in the butt. Like, yeah. She's able to expunge all her feelings, but then she's given this whole new platter of grief to deal with.
Yeah, I got to see it again. It's either she short circuits and she just can't cope,
but good Lord,
or she actually just backs off her son. Yeah,
I mean, that scene, she is going overboard. She's giving 120% and going for it and leaving it all out there. And I think she might have scared her co-stars. I think the fear in their eyes was real.
There were many scenes in this movie where I'm like, what are those extras thinking right now? They just got to be like, well, this is why I'm here and she's there. Right? I mean, this is why.
I didn't know she had this in her, really. And I know I'm gushing about it over and over.
Here. Yeah. She belongs there.
The camera belongs on
her. I have to freeze. She gets to move.
What about worst scene? Do you have anything for that?
There are questionable motivations for each character. Some of those play on the horror movie tropes. Like, just turn the lights on. Come on. You know, walk it through. Turn the lights on.
Yeah.
Turn the lights on. I want to scream at the... it would have been too cliched. You probably had the same thing going through your head. It would have been too cliched for you. You'd have had to, made a reference, like a Dennis Miller or something in there. So, it's some of that, but it's more just legit. I don't want to say on purpose. I don't know yet if it's on purpose melodrama or not. I think it is on purpose. So I wanted to criticize something earlier in the movie. I wanted to even nudge you and say, WTF is going on here. Of course this was going to end badly. Of course this is so stupid. But I think it was meant to be.
Interesting.
I don't know.
My worst scene, as of now, and I reserve the right to change it, and I've said this a couple times, this played to me as someone with a fantastic premise who never really nailed down what the ending was supposed to be. And it's tough for me to give more than that.
I'm going to say this. The ending was super duper eventful.
Yeah. Oh, you're watching the whole time. You're not. I didn't come out with a criticism of it until the credits were rolling.
Yeah.
You know, you're intrigued as to what the movie's explanation is going to be.
I don't know what it means.
No, me either. And if it means more than, if it's above my head, which I wouldn't doubt.
Well, it's above mine right now.
Yeah, we're going to clear it up and maybe it turns into my best scene. But if it's face value, at its face value, and if it's that's what it stands for, I don't think it lives up to the excitement and the anticipation and the agony, quite frankly, that brought you to it.
Well, that's interesting. For me, I'm engaged and I am paid off. I feel good about it. And I think I'm satisfied. I guess the best word is satisfaction. I'm satisfied with what I got. I never mentioned this in my expectations, but I didn't love The Witch.
You mentioned that prior, though.
I mentioned it in other pods. Yeah. I didn't love The Witch. So as good as the reviews were for this, The Witch got really good reviews, too. I was like, well, I mean, these guys did The Witch.
Yeah.
So I didn't love that. So I don't know why I'm turning to Jack Nicholson here. But so I was a little bit tempered. So I don't know. Again, expectations, rule the day in some forms. That's why you tune into podcasts like this, of the non-spoiler variety. I guess the last thing I want to say, other than that this is a watch, is that we're going to do the deep dive. And I think I want to cross the T's and dot the I's on this one at some point.
Yeah, it warrants revisiting. It's definitely a watch for me as well. It's definitely a watch if you're a horror fan. It's definitely a watch if you're an Oscars fan. Go see this movie. Hopefully you walk out with more answers than we have currently right now. But if you don't...
There are smarter people than us.
Yeah, without question. But if you don't, come back here. We're going to revisit this in due time for its Oscar sprint profile because we firmly believe that this is going to be up there for a couple things. But what about your questions with the witch? Good Lord. What about your questions with Hereditary? Did it hit the mark for you? Did the ending suffice you? Did it leave you wanting more? Did you have anything to say to Toni Collette? Do you want her to scold you at any point? I don't. Let us know all these things.
I want to hang with Gabriel Byrne and only Gabriel Byrne from this movie. Sorry.
We are Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MMN Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike, and Oscar on Reddit, Mike, and Oscar.com. We're Mike, and Oscar on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, all those places that you could find podcasts. And if you are visiting us on there, we would really, really appreciate a like, a thumbs up, leave us a little review. If you do, we'll try to read it out on air and give you a shout out. Thank you very much. Those go a long way in helping us out. Yes. If you do have the time.
We've been planning another social media shout out. So we're thinking of focusing on an iTunes review. So for those in particular, if you can just throw the 5-star at us, or if you can write a few sentences, you know, we want to read some that we already have that we think are fun. A lot of pods do this. I think, you know, sometimes we follow
conventions.
Yeah. Sometimes, most times we don't.
We should be counter convention like this movie.
So we should read our hate mail only? No,
yes.
No.
Especially with people as fragile, with egos as fragile as ours.
Let's put it this way. If you write us a particularly funny, horrible review, but still give us 5 stars, we might read that.
Yeah, you could be mean, but give us the 5 stars.
It kind of matters because more people learn it. Thanks. Thank you.
Guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. Let us know how you felt about Hereditary. We'll check you out next time.
See ya.